Please join me in welcoming Dr. Ray Guarendi.
Spectacular Corpus Christi Saturday. Folks have given up the whole day to come here. Tells me one of two things about you. You're caring, loving, faith-filled people. Or you got no life whatsoever. Either way, thanks for showing up. The part about the 10 kids is true. That's why I'm here. Quieter here and it smells better. People find out I got 10 kids, I always get this. All right. Now that you got your own kids, what have you learned? I learned something very critical. I don't take them out in public. You take them out in public, invariably, they'll pull some stunt. Embarrasses the heck out of you. People know you're a shrink, it's worse, because you can almost hear them thinking out loud, yeah, let's just see what Mr. Psycho Man does about this one. I figure it this way. We get our vengeance. First 9, 10 years of life out in public, they embarrass us. After that, you embarrass them. Oh, man, come on, Mom. Don't wear the pants with the feathers. Mom! Don't wave at me when people are looking right at us. And, Dad, I'm not going to pull your finger. Some years ago, big-name pediatrician told you folks this. Never tell your toddler no. Excuse me, Butkus. I can't go with the ice pick in your sister's head. I'm not comfortable with that. I'm sensing some aggression. We're going to take 2 stickers off your system. We'll give them back at the hospital when the bleeding stops. Or this one. Do not send a teenager to her room for punishment. Rooms are to be positive places with positive feelings. I got sent to my room a couple thousand times a year when I was a kid. Whatever bad feelings I developed toward my bed, I overcame. By the way, you know the definition of impending middle age? It's when your wife gives up intimacy for Lent. And you don't realize it until Monday after Easter. This guy's looking at me like, what's your point, man? We know when Lent is. It's January 6th to August 28th. What is the common denominator to that kind of advice? 2 things. 1, nonsense. 2, it's said by people with letters after their names. Ever notice that? 99% of all the advice out there comes from the supposed expert types. What if we came to you and we said, I understand you have a pretty good family. Mind if I talk to you, ask you how you're doing it? That's what we did in Back to the Family. Interviewed strong families, all 50 states, had a couple from Corpus, and we asked them, tell us your ways. What did we find? 107 families, 387 kids. Described variously as responsible, mature, kind-hearted. Keep that in mind for a little bit from now. Average number, 3. 1 of each. You know, I'm going too fast for that whole section right there. She's looking at me like, did I leave the iron on? Maximum number was 21. Farm family from South Dakota. Mother's name was Lucille. Now, you got to figure the mother of 21 kids is going to be named Lucille. It's not going to be Tiffany. Bambi. Husband's name was Willard. It's as though God went, I got 21 kids. Lucille, Willard. It's not going to be Buffy and JJ. I was doing an interview. The guy said, what's the most reassuring finding in this book, in your opinion? I think it's this. Some years ago, In Reader's Digest, there was an article that said the 10 worst things you can say to a child. And they listed these 10 things that you had better never say if you're going to be a good parent. I figured this was pretty hideous stuff, so I looked it up. I don't know about you. Any given day, I could say 5 or 6 of them. You give me a week, I'll run the whole list. It was stuff like this. Because I said so, that's why. If you don't come now, I'm leaving without you. My dad raised me on that one. Can you please just be quiet? I have 10 kids, 5 boys, 5 estrogen Americans. And I tell my girls, every thought in your head doesn't have to come out your mouth. You could make a case that these are not the 10 coolest things to say to kids, but the 10 worst? Talk about media hyperbole. We were in Chicago interviewing a mom from Chicago, and we asked a lot about their childhoods. She said, I didn't have a good childhood. It was kind of rough. My brother died. I was 5. He was 2. Hit me hard. But as a little kid, you move on with life rather quickly, except my parents. As I grew up and I frustrated them, they'd say things like this. You know the wrong child died. That makes my top 10 list. That's unspeakable. Now, ladies, I got to preface this. I'm a highly trained professional communicator. So what I asked this woman next was on the basis of years of training. Please do not expect your husband to have this kind of probing sensitivity. I said to her, how did that make you feel? She said, obviously it hurt, but I think it helped make me the parent I am today. I said, you'll have to explain that one. She said, every time I heard that, it was an emotional slam in the gut. But I became more and more determined. If I ever became a parent, my kids were never going to doubt my love for them. If I had to kill them, they're not going to doubt my love for them. Her son was there. He was 14. Tell us about your mother, he said. My mother's the most affectionate person I know. She had no affection growing up. And then the kid said, I think one of the best lines in the book. She had to teach herself to be affectionate. What a great line! Most reassuring finding in this book, 25% of these parents had ugly, traumatic, chaotic, abusive, alcohol-ridden, nasty childhoods. And they went on to be the best parents somebody had ever seen. The resiliency of the human spirit. But you see, the experts are floating around out there. You had a bad childhood, you're going to have a bad adulthood. You're going to think you're okay. Oh, you may stumble your way along for a while, and then one day you're going to come home and you're going to torch the whole neighborhood. And people are going to say, she was such a quiet lady. Knitted shawls for the women in the nursing homes. Went to Catholic conferences on Saturdays. When I was in graduate school, we were taught a theory, and it's still pretty prominent. A child's personality is established by the age of 5 or 6. I don't know about you, but I'm real different now than I was when I was 5 or 6. My wife says I have the maturity level of a 9-year-old. That's pretty high for husbands, you know. When you were 5 or 6, did you have any political party affiliations? Deep religious convictions? What qualities would you value in an older second grade man at age 5 or 6? This is old psychological theory. Can you imagine the Holy Spirit going up to somebody? So, you're really
You really want to embrace your faith, huh?
I'd like to make you a new person, but I can't. I needed to get you before you were 5 or 6. You know what I mean? You're already established in concrete. I'll do what I can, but there's only so much. I asked a group of ladies one night, marriage conference. When is personality established? Complete, done, can't change it now. Lady in the back raised her hand. When you're married? No, ma'am. When your life is over? She said, same thing. It was a tough crowd, tough crowd. One of the big differences in these families was the guys. Gentlemen, do you know what I'm hearing from more and more women? That they are the leaders and the authority in their homes. They set the rules, they set the tone, they set the religion, they set the discipline, they set the standards, and Disney Dad over here, Mr. Good Time, Mr. Oblivious, Mr. Laid Back, Not Notice Nothing, Keep the Peace, Mr. Honey, I was that way when I was a kid, and I think I turned out pretty good. And the women are thinking, let's gather the relatives and vote. More and more women are telling me they're doing the lioness's share of the religious instruction and the discipline, and we dads are along for the ride. Do what your mom says. Do what your mother says. I do what your mother says. Everybody does what your mother says, okay? You want to live till tomorrow? Do what your mother says. Gentlemen, I'm going to give you a soundbite we learned from these families. Protect. I doubt that too many guys in here would let anybody else talk to their wife the way that child talked to their wife on a daily basis. Next time you hear your wife locked into a battle with a kid, don't sit in a Barca lounger, closing your eyes, thinking, if I wasn't in this room, I wouldn't know which one of them's the 11-year-old. Get in there. Protect that woman. It's not just your mom you're talking to that way. That's my wife. You go to your room. I'm going to find out what she wants me to do about this. Well, you can't protect right off the bat. You're going to get hurt. And then I'm going to do more. I'll tell you what, guys, you stand up for that woman. There's a technique that I have called take a bullet for your wife. Here's how it works. You know how the kids hammer at her, push on her, argue with her, because she's more negotiable. She's more willing. See, dads, we're more like this.
Tolerate, tolerate, oblivious, oblivious.
Kill!
Tolerate, tolerate.
Explode! You tell your wife to tell those kids, honey, they start giving you grief about something, you say, go talk to dad. This is dad's idea. Whether it is or whether it isn't. And don't act dumb when they come in there. Mom says this is your idea.
It is? How'd that happen?
You protect that woman a few times, guys. They'll feel very affectionate towards you. Sometimes I'll give my boys a couple bucks. Go down and give your mother grief. I'll be right down. Worked pretty good till she found out I was only giving them a couple bucks. Then she got upset.
We asked the kids, what do your parents do that you hate the most? Keep in mind, these were good families. We didn't hear things like, oh, I hate when the police come here before breakfast. You know that? When we have to switch parole officers right in the middle of middle school. No, these are good families. So what the kids tagged was lectures. My mother is the queen of lectures. I'd be in the backyard oblivious when my mother would begin. Raymond Nicholas Guarendi. How many times are you going to make me call you Buster? You know, buddy boy, you seem to think I talk just to hear myself talk. You seem to think I like the sound of my own voice. I'm going to tell you something. You better listen, and you better listen good, because I'm not going to say it again. I was not put on this earth to serve you. There are five other people in this house. You can get a ball for our schedule around yours. You're going to come waltz here, pluck your bucket down when you're darn good and ready. Mom, I'm hungry. Beat me up. I'm going to get up from what I'm doing. You got another thing coming, Buster. You mark my words, there's going to be some changes around here because I am sick and I am tired. I have just about had you up to here. You don't realize how good you got it. You look at me when I talk to you. Don't you look at me like that. I never moved. She wasn't mad enough yet. My mother's philosophy, first 30,000 didn't get you anywhere. Double it. You think you got a tough? I am going to tell you what tough is. When I was a little girl, I used to walk 18 miles uphill both ways to school in a foot of nuclear waste with no shoes. We had one pair that glowed for 14 brothers and sisters. My turn only came around every 2 weeks. Always gave my turn away. That's the kind of girl I was. I got up 5 o'clock in the morning. 2 hours before we were even allowed to go to bed. Split a cornflake for breakfast with 8 brothers. Carried him to school on my back. And you want to know something? I was grateful for what little I had. What'd you have, Mom? Nothing! Weren't you listening? But we were happy children. See, we think if we pile word after word after word after word, ultimately the child is going to go, "Oh, Mother, I've been so blind. I see what you're saying. Let's hold hands, sing Kumbaya around the campfire. You make such perfect sense. This is a number that the experts have done upon you. That somehow, some way, if you just reason and reason and reason, the child's going to go, you know, Mom, had you stopped 47 minutes ago, I don't think I would have seen parenthood through your eyes. But because you went on for another 48 minutes, it's all clear. I came home one day. My oldest son at the time was Andrew, 6. I asked my wife, this is back when I cared about where the children were. Honey, where's Andrew? I sent him to bed. Why? He lied to me. Oh. So I figure I'm going to go up and talk to Andrew. I'm a highly trained professional, you know. Going to get to the bottom of this. Andrew's in his bed staring at the ceiling. Hey, Andrew. Mom tells me you lied. I don't remember. Hey, by the way, you know what, Bishop, I want to go to confession like the politicians. Bless me, Father, mistakes were made. And I would like to apologize if God misunderstood the context of my behavior. If he misinterpreted something and I did and became offended by it, I'd like to apologize for his sensitivity. I said, Andrew, what kind of answer is that? Mom says you lied. Now, I'm going to ask you, did you lie? And if you lie to me, well, now you got 2 lies. Did you lie? I still don't remember. But if Mom said I did, there's probably a pretty good chance I did. All right, that's a weasel answer. This kid needs a talking to, and I'm the guy to do it. This is going to be one of those things where our souls connected. We linked. And I knew, God willing, 35 years hence, we'd be sitting in the house at Thanksgiving. Andrew would interrupt everybody and say, I'd like to say something that changed the direction of my life. It's an experience I had with Dad. So I said, Andrew, look at me, son. And then I went on. For 8, 9, 10 straight minutes about truth, trustworthiness, my own childhood, how I disappointed my own father, how people have to know your word means what it said. And he was locked. Our souls were one. When I was done, Andrew, is there anything you want to say, son?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Hey, Dad, how come if my one eye looks at the ceiling, my other eye can't look at the floor? Now, somewhere in my mini speech, I lost that boy. And I think it was when I said, Andrew, look at me, son. These parents said, say what you have to say, back it up, and then realize when a teenager in particular says, you never listen, you just don't listen to my side. You could listen for 48 minutes. You're not agreeing. That's what they mean by you're not listening. If you can listen and then not agree, then you're not listening. Remember that. Number one house rule in these families, most prominently enforced, with the heaviest consequences, and most non-negotiable. Respect. Respect. As a shrink, I see a lot of people come into my office and I'm basically stunned at the pervasive lack of disrespect of kids for their parents. The tone, the looks, the body language, the rolling of the eyes, the disdain. I call it the battered parent syndrome. It's gone on so much that the parents don't even realize it's going on. Think about this a second. Do a little test. If you want to know whether your child is being disrespectful or expressing feelings, do a little test. For the next 3 weeks, take what the child is doing to you. Do the exact same thing to your boss, your best friend, or your bishop. So, every time that person says or does something you don't approve of, simply respond like this. Whatever. That is not expressing feelings. That's disdain. I came home one day, and my wife was clearly unhappy with something one of the children did. And again, because I'm so highly trained, I can pick up on the subtleties of a woman's body language. I pulled into the driveway and I noticed she wasn't happy. She was walking down the driveway holding two children by their necks, going, I do not like them, Ray, I am. I do not like them in my hair. I do not like them anywhere. I picked up on this. Honey, are you upset? At the same time, my daughter, Sarah, who was 12, comes walking down and says, Mom, what do you want me to do now? She said, well, Sari, after you're done sweeping out the garage, you're going to then vacuum the living room and the family room. Let me know when you're done because you're going to sort the socks. And I said to my wife, I was nervous. I said, what happened here? She said, I gave Sarah 2 hours worth of labor. Now, labor means basically you're going to do what we said you're going to do because of what you did, and you're not going to get any privileges until you serve the labor. What did she do? She rolled her eyes at me. Oh, wait a minute. 2 hours worth of labor for rolling your eyes? Is that because rolling your eyes is so egregious? No. It's because your mother is so valuable. That's why. Ladies, you got your own commandment. You got 10% of the commandments. You're mentioned by name. And you know what some of you moms do? You say things like this. Well, okay, I'll admit, we butt heads, and the way she talks to me just frustrates me. But I must be doing something right because everybody else loves her. They think she's a great kid. Okay. Do a little experiment. Let's say you're in a grocery store and some woman comes up to you that you don't know. She says, excuse me,
I know you don't know me, and I don't mean to make you feel ill at ease, but I work with your husband. He is, I have to tell you, he is the most popular guy at work. He's the most positive. He's the most pleasant. The ladies adore him because all he does is compliment them. He never has a negative or scolding word. You must have a wonderful relationship. Now, if you do, you can say, yes, I got a gem. But if you don't, if your relationship falls short of that, you don't think to yourself, well, I'm glad he treats other women good. You know, I must be doing something right. I'm happy about that. You need to be treated with respect. These families said this. They had multiple consequences for it. My favorite, of course, is an essay. You will write 100, 200, 300, 500 words on why it's important to be respectful or why you're grateful that you live here. One of the things you'll notice is that girls and boys write different essays. My son would write an essay. Dear Mom and Dad, I am sorry that I told Sarah to get out of my room when she came into my room and I told her to get out, because that is not nice. And you should be nice to Sarah because she is your sister. And I know that you do not like it. And God does not like it, and Mary does not like it, and St. James does not like it, and St. Paul does. He's 17. And my daughter will write the same essay. Dearest mother and father, while I do recognize you seem to be aware of what occurred in there, I fail to understand how you could know this. Furthermore, I fail to understand how you think at all times to accept Sarah's version of events, when in fact we both know it. She's ripping us up in the essay! She's 7. No privileges till the essay's done. What does this refer to? Sends mixed messages. Creates a mic. Makes right mentality. Solves problems through force. Is a form of child abuse. Big people hurting little people. What does that refer to? Spanking, sure. Those are the standard indictments now leveled against spanking. The vast majority of experts are violently anti-spanking. I had a lady send me an email once. She said, friend of mine referred me to your radio show. So I tuned in. And I see that you believe in hurting children. She went on for a while, and then she said something to the effect of, may you roast in hell. And I wanted to write back and say, Would that be more violent than a swat on a bottom? The experts tell you that any parent who now swats a bottom, because you believe in it, because it's effective, is not only psychologically out of whack, but you're creating damage. You're evil incarnate. Ponder this a second. We ask these families, do you, did you, will you, spank? 70% said yes. 30% said no. That's what I say to you. I don't care if you spank. That's up to you. That's your decision. It's your family. It's not my family. But what bothers me is that we've now created a mindset where there are 3 sins left in our culture. There's only 3. You can do anything else you want. There's 3 sins left. Smoking, spanking, and having more than 1.62 children. Those are the 3 sins left. But Dr. Ray, every week, don't you hear a study? New study shows children who are spanked are more aggressive. New study shows children who are spanked have poor self-images. New study shows that children who are spanked are more confused and live in fear. New study shows that children who get more spanks have more psoriasis. New study shows children more susceptible to mosquito bites if they're spanked.
Don't have time today to get into it. Bishop, no offense, but the diocese is not paying me enough, okay? Given what you guys are paying me, you're lucky you're getting verbs, okay? However, these are not studies. Don't have time to all the details of the research. These are not studies. These are surveys. And the problem with surveys is multiple. However, not the least of which is this. If a person swings first and swings a lot, they're probably not a real skilled parent. And their discipline is probably not real good. And as a result, they're frustrated and upset and inconsistent. That creates the problem. The spanking is a symptom of the main problem. I was on a talk show once. Lady was on there who believed that if you swatted a bottom, you are evil incarnate. At one point, the host said to me, "Ray, do you spank your children?" I said, yeah, that some of them have gotten spanks, others never, depending on the kid. She wheeled on me. "Your children fear you then." "Jeez, lady, I fear you. Here, take some lewds, tone it down, would you? Spray some Ritalin in your face or something." I said to her, "How can you say that? You don't know me or my kids. How could you say that?" That's not what bothered me. I didn't care what she thought. I got home that day. My son was sitting there watching this with his mom. She said, "Andrew, you fear daddy?" He said something I'll never forget. Ripped my heart open when he said it. "Do you fear daddy?" He said, "No." That's what ticked me off. "What do you mean you don't fear me? I'm three times your size." We've created an interesting culture. First of all, let me tell you, there is no research anywhere of legitimacy that says spanking done by a loving parent in a loving, stable home causes any kind of problem. You may not like it. You may not want to do it. That's quite different. The American Academy of Pediatrics reviewed all of the research on the subject, and they concluded we were wrong. It doesn't do this in loving homes. And at the end, they said, but we're still against it. And as I spoke to the article, as I often do, I said, you can be against it all you want. That's your opinion. That's fine. But don't tell all these people that if they've had occasion to do this, they're hurting their kid in some psychologically unseen way, and 23 years from now, he'll be sitting on some Springer Junior encounter group with 9 other drug addict, cross-dressing, social parolee, bad chick writing misfits. He's their leader. Talking about you, Dad, and the time you swatted his bottom when he was 4. We've created a culture where if you told somebody this, I went out and I bought one of those big satellite dishes. I can pull down 1,022 channels. I can pull down every piece of rot, gut, sewage that you could imagine. And I'm going to let my kids watch anything they want. You know why? Because I think it's important for us to have teachable moments to talk about why, indeed, we don't do those kinds of things. Most people would look at you and say, I think you're terribly misguided. But they couldn't do a thing about it. You could rot out your child's soul if you wanted. They can't do a thing about it. But don't be in a grocery store and do this. Because you know as well as I do, in the back of your mind, you're wondering if 22 minutes from now in your driveway, you're going to hear, "Woo!" Mrs. Paddlebottom, come out with your wooden spoon above your head. Do you have a license for that paint stick? We have you on a concealed fly swatter charge. As I said, I don't care if you spank or you don't. That's your business. But what scares me is when the experts can decide on the basis of no legitimate research, just their theory and their opinion, that you can't be trusted to parent in a certain way. Why can't they do that with anything? You think I exaggerate? I was in Connecticut talking to a group of daycare providers in their home. Lady came up to me afterward and told me, introduced into the state legislature was a bill outlawing, not spanking, that had already been outlawed. Time out. Yes. Oh, yeah. In child development circles, timeout is viewed as negative. It is isolation. It is shaming. It is not solving the problem. It is raw punishment. See, as long as I can do that on my expert credentials, honey, does your mother yell at you? Really? How loud does she get? Ooh. You ever been sent to your room? For how long? Did you miss supper? And I've had this often in my office. So, that's it. Spanking is your decision. It must be judged as all discipline is judged. How well does it work in your home, with your children, with your value system? And by the way, most parents are bad spankers. They spank when they're frustrated. Spank when they've had enough. Or they do tokenism. Put the kid's wrist up here. You hold it. Your hand moves forward at 30 miles an hour. His butt moves forward at 25. The net impact is 5 miles an hour. You can't get a clear shot at him. I have the books available. Fighting Mad is a book about conquering anger. Back to the Family book is there. Much, much, much more detail than this. DVD presentation of my most popular talk, You're a Better Parent Than You Think, is there. When Faith Causes Family Friction is my most recent book. That is basically when you take your faith seriously and you run into all kinds of problems with your friends, your family, your spouse, your kids, your neighbors, because of it. Those are all over there. All of my books come with a Springer guarantee. Your children, your grandchildren will never be on Jerry Springer. Unless that's from a past life on another planet, I can't do anything about that. I want to include this. I've taken to closing many of the talks with this because it is such a now pervasive phenomenon, in my opinion, in the history of the Catholic faith. This is an unprecedented phenomenon. Many of you sitting out there have watched your young adult children leave the faith. They've abandoned it. They've rejected it as, yeah, that's mom's thing. Or they're like I talked about this afternoon, they're like I was for a while, a new atheist, which is, hey, mom, I'm Catholic, but God thinks like me, so I can live with my boyfriend. Or they've gone to another denomination, another faith tradition. What do? You beat yourself up. Where did you go wrong? What did you miss? Maybe you should have prayed the rosary in Aramaic on your knees in broken glass while you levitated instead of just sitting on the couch when they fell asleep half the time. I used to do that. My 10 kids are adopted. It's interesting, I'll digress for a second. My wife used to take the kids to the grocery store back when all 10 of them were under 12. We had 12, 11, 10, 10, 9, 7, that was a bunch of them. And I have 3 white kids, 2 Hispanic kids, 2 biracial kids, and 3 black kids. My wife would be in a grocery store and people would see this. You had to see that, strung out behind her like ducks, you know. Hands at their side, not allowed to touch anything. And they would not deviate 6 inches either way out of a straight line the whole 2 hours they were in there. No, they didn't. Leg irons wouldn't let them. People would see this. 3 whites, 2 Hispanics, 2 biracial, 3 blacks. Some of them were pretty bald. Is some kind of club or something? Some of them wouldn't say a whole lot, but I could read in their eyes, that major dork don't realize them ain't all his. I suspect her, but I can't catch her. 9 of my 10 children are now young adults. Some have left the faith. Okay, my wife says, God asked us to raise them.
God asked us to give them a family, which we did. And now, they are people. We raised people. Some of you are beating yourself up pretty badly about where your children are right now in the faith. I want to prove to you this afternoon that that should be over. It is done. There is no more of you looking back, scouring your past on how you fell short, how you blew it, what you missed, where you went wrong. Why are two of them in the faith but three of them gone? I have a series of questions. Please just answer yes or no. Is Jesus God? Was he sinless? Could he perform miracles? Did he have a perfect understanding of human nature? Could he get most people to follow him? Well now, do you all just think you're better at this than the God-man, huh? You can't perform a miracle. You can't even do a crummy card trick. You did your best as you knew it, however you knew it. Maybe you're much further along in the faith now than you ever were. And you think, yeah, but I blew it. They grew up with me being a lukewarm, wishy-washy wimp of a faithful person. Thank God you are where you are now. You can influence them now, however, but don't preach to them. Don't nag them. Don't drag them. Don't say things. Well, you know, I was thinking, you know, are you thinking about, you know, baptizing the baby? I mean, he is 17. I mean, Bishop's going to have a hard time kind of like holding him and dunking him down in there. I told a touching marriage story this afternoon. I want to close with another one. And this is a true story, by the way. My Uncle Giuseppe went to a marriage conference. Priest was there, a lot of young guys. Giuseppe, tell these young men how to keep a marriage happy like you did with your wife for 48 years? Well, you got to be nice. You got to do nice things. You got to make her feel special. For our 25th anniversary, I take her to Italy. Priest says, Giuseppe, that's very nice. Now, you've been married 48, you got two more years to 50. How are you going to top that? Well, for my 50, I'm going to go get her and bring her back. Hey, thanks for letting me be part, huh?